Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. So now let's talk mass murder. Just like the Germans, we whites in Africa have also been accused of all sorts of mass murder. But as usual, it's just got a political angle. When somebody else carries out mass murder, then it's not a problem. So they'll go on and on about how the Belgians murdered the blacks in the Congo by the million. Exactly how true that is, I don't know. I've never dug into it. But I know that they claim millions were killed by the Belgians. But when the Zulus murdered 1.4 million blacks here in the center of South Africa in the 1820s, nobody's concerned about that. They're more concerned about slavery in the same time. They're more concerned about the fact that white Americans brought slaves to America, even though the Jews were heavily involved in the whole slave trade. But they're more concerned about the blacks who went to America as slaves than they are about the blacks who genocided other blacks here in Africa during the same period of time. Won't hear a peep about it. And of course, they're more interested in slavery in America because they're looking for $1 trillion from the whites. The fact that more black slaves went to Brazil is never mentioned. See, Brazil is poor, so nobody can go and steal money from the Brazilians. But, you know, if you could get $1 trillion out of the white Americans, well, then it's worth making a whole story about how evil and horrible it is. But it's only because they might be able to get money, or they tried to get money. Hopefully, they never get a cent. Just to fill you in a bit, I had a very fascinating discussion with one of our regulars on this channel. He lives in Eastern Europe, and he and I chatted on Skype the other day, and I kid you not, we chatted right through the night. He had tons and tons of information. Very, very interesting. So we'll be coming back to some of that. And when I see some of what the Europeans have got, man, the Europeans can totally rock. The only problem the Europeans have is they have no freedom to do anything. They can't do a damn thing. Every single time they open their mouths or they try to do a little something, there's some freaking Jewish law that's busy blocking them. Europeans were not freed. They were not liberated in May 1945. No, that was the day when all Europeans lost their freedom, and half of the people of our race and our continent actually were thrown straight into the arms of the nightmare of Soviet communism. Oh, what a wonderful thing we did, hey? Those of us who fought against the Germans. Meanwhile, every European worth his salt was fighting the Soviets, and they didn't want the damn Soviets to come and rule Europe. Yet, that nightmare came true for them. What a nightmare. But out of this nightmare has come one good thing. It seems as if white nationalism is very much alive in all the places where the Jews used to be, and where Jews and their communism used to be. Even among the Poles. And Poland was the most Jewish populated country by percentage of any country in Europe. And Poland's a very special and interesting country. We need to go and talk about Poland because the Jews got up to so much in Poland. And that is where quotes World War II began, and that's where the Jews were busy playing, over and above the Soviet Union, where the Jews were busy playing. Now, returning to Africa and mass murder, we whites were blamed of all kinds of mass murder. And the only actual mass murder that I know of that was documented by Rhodesians was the poisoning of blacks who were volunteering to fight for the other side. And this is something that I picked up from various people, and you'll find references to it in various books. So this is something that did happen. The whites did systematically poison all the blacks that were being recruited to fight against us. And how they did it is very ingenious. And most Rhodesians don't like to talk about it, but I regard it as a great topic and one that I'm proud of. I don't see anything wrong with killing your enemy who's getting ready to kill you. So if you can preemptively kill them, no problem. And actually, Jews are busy preemptively killing all sorts of people. And we will go and examine the many famous leaders killed by the Jews. And the Jews killed them preemptively before they even did anything. And in war, all sorts of preemptive strikes and moves are also made. In the case of Napoleon at Austerlitz, Napoleon invaded Austria because Russian and Austrian armies were heading to attack France. So Napoleon hit them first. What Napoleon did was exactly the same as what Hitler did with Russia. Russia had already been an aggressor, and Russia was going to invade Germany. It was that simple. But there are lots of supposed mass killings that are taken completely out of context. Either they never happened, or they are massively twisted in the news. One of those about South Africa was the Sharpeville massacre, when thousands of blacks armed and were going to attack this little police station and kill everybody inside. So when the police in this little police station managed to successfully fight off the blacks, the mass media then turned around and said, "Oh, it's a massacre by the police. The police were the ones who were the aggressors." Meanwhile, the pictures can be seen where you'll see all the weapons that the blacks had. They were going to exterminate this little police station. But the mass media is a tool of the Jews, and this thing twists anything and everything. And of course, the Holocaust is one of the biggest lies ever told. It's so hard to choose which are the biggest lies, but this lie in particular has been so thoroughly told and mistold and misrepresented. When Rhodesia carried out among its first cross-border raids and started attacking enemy base camps from which blacks were coming and attacking Rhodesia, the blacks then ran off to the United Nations and they said, "Oh, you know, the Rhodesians came and they killed women and children." So the United Nations sent people to come and have a look. But before they got there, the blacks took bulldozers and they bulldozed all the corpses into the ground. So then they just had some women and children sitting around telling their sob stories. But meanwhile, all those that were buried in the ground were soldiers, black soldiers, killed by the Rhodesians. But they never came and they never dug up a single body to come and prove that we'd killed women and children. Now, it was a whole carefully staged load of nonsense. But with the Germans, the lies are even bolder than that. I remember in 1994, April 1994, when black rule came to South Africa, and the entire world was here, and the mass media of the world was here, to now proclaim how free the blacks were going to be, and that the rule of the terrible, horrible Boers had finally come to an end. While the news media was here, and you had the BBC, CNN, NBC, the whole lot of them here, While this mass media was here, suddenly forward came this black guy, and he said to them that he knew where the Boers had buried the bodies of large numbers of blacks that they'd murdered during apartheid. So, of course, these liberals and Jews were only too delighted to present this story to the world. But, of course, you have to also ask yourself, who was conniving with who about this story? Anyhow, so here was this black guy and he said, I know where the Boers buried lots of dead people. And they rushed off there with their cameras and the journalists were there. And he showed them a piece of ground and he said to them, here is where the Boers buried large numbers of dead blacks that they'd killed. So all these American and European channels were going crazy as they were trying to get this story out. Oh man, we found the mass graves where these bloody white bastards have been burying these blacks that they've been killing. And they brought in earth-moving equipment, bulldozers, etc. And they were running the story like crazy. The whole world was going to watch. Anyway, they came with their bulldozers and their earth-moving equipment and they started digging. And they dug and they dug and they dug for a day or so. And they didn't find anything. And then the black guy says to them, oh, you know what? I got it wrong. Sorry, my mistake. I got it wrong. They weren't buried there. If you just go and dig a little bit to the side over there, that's where they're buried. Just go dig there. So, okay, everyone's all excited again. Yes, let's go. And they rushed off to start digging now at the new spot. And they dug and they dug and they dug. And after about 2 or 3 days in total, with not a single bone having been found, the mass media very quietly started losing interest and started switching to other stories. And so everybody started forgetting about this thing. Because this black, quotes, eyewitness, his story had not panned out at all. So whether this was just a black nut trying to get some 5 minutes of fame for his stupid story, or, and I suspect this is more likely, there was some propaganda going on here, because we'll still talk about mind control. We'll come back to mind control and Jews as a separate topic. Anyhow, here these people had now spent all their time and money, and they had very aggressively put out this story as if it was real, when in fact it wasn't real. But they did go and create the impression that it was real, even though later they found it wasn't real. Now, those of you who've watched my video, Jewish Malicious Rumors and Donald Trump, you'll recall that I went through another story about the Nazi train, which is exactly the same as this, exactly the same thing, where the mass media across the world blasts out this story. Oh, we found a Nazi train filled with gold. This is the gold they stole from the Jews. And then, of course, later when people go and look, there was no train, etc. But the story, when it's found to be not true, nobody spreads it with even a hundredth of the energy that they spread the first story. So large numbers of people get this impression, oh, this is true. And then when their retraction is printed or not even hinted at, nobody gets to hear the retraction, the fact that the story is a lie. And keep this in mind. So all you hear is this loud shrieking as if it's true, as if it's true. But it's not true, and there's no evidence for it. With regard to Rhodesia's preemptive killing of blacks, I should mention another story I've come across, that in this so-called war against terrorism, just to show you that everybody's unethical, make no mistake, they were showing that they were feeding bullets to the so-called Islamic terrorists, bullets which were designed to explode and either damage the weapon or better still injure the person firing it. Of course, it's not every round that does this. They put these specially designed defective bullets and they get them to the Islamic terrorists via their various supply routes and so forth. So when they're busy shooting, they don't know which round is actually going to be one that the West has tampered with, that America has tampered with. So that gives you an idea of just some of the dirty tricks that go on. Don't imagine war is a clean business. War is the ultimate game of survival, and almost anything goes. However, the Germans have probably got the cleanest track record with regard to fighting war of anybody out there. If you dig around, you'll find out how many millions of white women in Europe were raped by the incoming Soviet armies. And you'll find out as well that the American GIs were also busy raping women as well. But see if you can find any example of German men raping women anywhere. I've never come across such a story. But on sheer scale, the Germans, given the massive size of their operations, they were actually the most professional, well-behaved troops of World War II. Now, at the end of World War I, the way they kept the Germans down was they did the Treaty of Versailles. And the Treaty of Versailles annoyed Hitler like the hell. Because the Treaty of Versailles literally disarmed Germans. The Germans had a teeny-weeny little army. Everybody around them was allowed to be armed to the teeth. And the Germans were denied aircraft and even tanks. So all these things were taken away from the Germans. And the whole purpose of Versailles was to keep the Germans down and to ensure that Germany never rises again. And this is where the feats of Adolf Hitler become so amazing. Because after Versailles on the one hand, plus all these communist-inspired revolutions run by Jews inside Germany, somehow by the absolute miracle of Adolf Hitler's personal genius, he managed to get Germany up on its feet and he managed to throw off the shackles. And of course, every effort had been made to ensure that Germany can never function again as a single nation. That was the whole purpose of the Versailles Treaty and everything thereafter. So at the end of World War II, they didn't quite institute exactly the same sort of thing, but it was very close. It was a very close run thing. They forbade the Germans from all sorts of things, including taking part in other wars. In fact, one of our German viewers asked me this question. So here's what one of our viewers wrote. I am a full ethnic German born in West Germany, and my family still lives in Germany. I've been told that because of World War I and World War II, there is a clause in their constitution that the Germans will not fight any more wars. What are your thoughts on this? I think I've heard of this before, and I think the Japanese also have similar clauses now because of World War II. So all these so-called new governments are new governments that are Jew-approved and American-English-approved. So it's got all kinds of restrictions on Germany and Japan. But when the Jews need you to die for Jewry, then anybody's blood is good enough for them. And I noticed how they've been trying to drag the Germans and even the Japanese into these wars against the Muslims. You'll notice that at one point with all these beheadings, atrocity propaganda, because you hear about all these beheadings, and every person who's beheaded is a white person. I remember that there was a bunch of beheadings of Japanese. And when I looked at it, I thought to myself, all that these bastards are trying to do is they're trying to take these so-called beheadings, whether they did or did not happen is really not the issue, but they're trying to use this kind of propaganda to stir up Germans and to stir up Japanese so that they'll go and fight Arabs for the benefit of the Jews. And there have been many requests by these globalists for Germany to take part in all these wars, because America was fighting these wars, and these wars were not going well. So now they're busy dragging everybody and his dog in to fight America's losing war for Jewry. So the English, of course, were the happy lapdogs going to go and fight and kill anybody as long as it's for Jewry, as the English have been doing for a very long time. But they were trying to drag other countries in. And as you can see, they've had certain success with France now. But they were trying to draw Germany into this as well. And I know the Germans sent some troops, I think, to Afghanistan. And I saw that the morale of the German troops was not good. And I don't blame them, because like those Americans who've said they're not going to go and fight in Syria, here were Germans now having to fight in Afghanistan. And I'm sure they were just as disinterested as the other Americans who didn't want to go and fight and die in Syria for Jewry. So as far as I'm concerned, no white person anywhere should waste one drop of their blood for Jewry. If the war does not benefit the white race and its nations and doesn't benefit our cause, we have no interest in it. And that is why Monica and I, who've talked many times about the whole war in the Middle East, we are quite opposed to this business of fighting the Muslims endlessly. It is Jewry that is creating a war between the Muslims and the white race. In the same way that Jewry created a war between blacks and whites in Africa. And that is a story that not many people know about. And I need to come back to this maybe, because I need to show you that the Jews come and create an entire racial war for our people for nothing. And all of it is to benefit the Jews. And anyway, the Jews will switch sides also. The Jews might back the whites today and then decide 20 years from now that they'll back the Muslims. The Jews are a whole other kettle of fish. And no white man and woman should be wasting 1 ounce of blood for a Jew or a Jewish cause. Your life, your blood, your body is worth far more than anything Jewish. No white person should be firing a shot in order to benefit a Jew. Not one. So returning to Germany, obviously these clauses, as wonderful as they sound on paper, as with anything where the Jews have been involved, it has a hypocritical value to it. So the Jews won't want Germany to fight for anything that might involve German interests, the same as they wouldn't want Japan to fight for anything that involves Japanese interests. But when it comes to fighting for Jewish interests, then the blood of a German or a Japanese soldier is good enough for the Jews. As long as some dummy will come and die for the Jews while the Jews sit around and do nothing, that's perfect. The Jews will go with that. So that's why they've been trying to drag the German army in, and I've been watching how the Germans have been very reluctant and making all sorts of excuses to do as little as possible. And that is a very good strategy. Do as little as you can. Best of all, do nothing to assist Jewry and the globalists, because all they are doing is just doing crazy stuff. And even these Americans who've done all these things for the Jews, wait until the Americans get that Jewish stab in the back. That Jewish stab in the back is centuries old, thousands of years old. The Jews have been doing this to many people. The Jews will betray America just as they've betrayed every other country and civilization in history where they've been. So let's take a closer look at the Holocaust. In one of my recent videos, I showed you that according to the Jewish Virtual Library, the definition of the Holocaust is defined as 30th of January 1933 to 8th of May 1945. And they tell you explicitly that it is January 30th, 1933, when Adolf Hitler became the Chancellor of Germany. that the Holocaust starts on that day. So all that had happened was that through normal democratic processes, Adolf Hitler became the Chancellor of Germany. And the Jews tell you that this is the day the Holocaust began. So their definition of the Holocaust is a date range. In one of David Irving's videos, he says that the Holocaust is defined as any piece of territory that Germany occupied during World War II. But strictly speaking, his definition is wrong, because the Jews actually define it as beginning before World War II officially began. Remember, officially it began in September 1939 when Germany attacked Poland. But the Jews, by their reckoning, say it's the day Adolf Hitler came to power. And in the Jewish definition, I see no mention of any territory. It doesn't say that it's any place ruled by Germany. So the Jewish definition is extremely broad. There is very little that you can actually latch on to except time here. So how the Jews use and abuse this Holocaust definition of theirs is a whole story by itself. But be aware that this is the Jewish definition, as in the Jewish Virtual Library. Now, as with all Jewish things, it's misleading. Because if you hear, oh, this Jew survived the Holocaust, you immediately think of fire and burning and gas and flames and screaming people. And you think, oh God, this Jew was busy almost being thrown in a furnace and this Jew managed to get out. And actually it's not. You'll find there's stacks and stacks and stacks of Jewish survivors of the quotes Holocaust, because their definition is so broad that any Jew whose toe was even touching Europe will be defined as a Holocaust survivor. So when they come up with Holocaust survivors, oh God, there are so many of them. A friend was telling me that in Johannesburg, one of the most densely populated parts of Johannesburg and a place known for its nightlife in the days of apartheid was called Hillbrow. And Jews lived in Hillbrow and Yeovil and the places near Hillbrow. I'm told that Jewish Holocaust survivors, all that in quotes, would come every month to get their pensions in Hillbrow. So all these, quotes, Jewish Holocaust survivors were coming and getting their pensions for having survived this so-called Holocaust. Steven Spielberg did a thing he called the Shoah Project, and he interviewed and filmed over 50,000 Jews, who were all Holocaust survivors. And he did this in recent decades. It is shocking to believe that there were still 50,000 Jews alive who had been in World War II, supposedly. So the question then is, how many Jews from World War II actually claimed to have survived this German Holocaust? According to some stats I've seen, they calculate that it's 200,000. But I seriously wonder at these numbers, because I wouldn't be surprised if these numbers were actually bigger. However, as David Irving says, a Jew who, quotes, survived the Holocaust is a Jew to whom very little actually happened. Unfortunately, David Irving seems to be losing the plot lately, and I suspect the Jews have been on his case, twisting his arm secretly in ways that people don't know. Because he's now starting to do all kinds of backtracking, and it's probably something he's doing, maybe in order to avoid a jail sentence. You never can tell. As you've seen, 80-year-olds get thrown in jail if they open their mouths, as happened to that Ursula Haverbeck woman in Germany. And I suspect the Jews have been twisting David Irving's arm big time. So I suspect that he's under all kinds of private threats and things. So if we return now to this interview on this Webster show. Let's go piece by piece through it, and we'll analyze this step by step. Because the whole point here is that you're going to see some proof of the Holocaust. So Webster starts by saying, just so that people don't think that the Holocaust didn't happen, let's look at an old news report. So this is the film footage you see from the news report. So you see an American soldier going through coats that are hanging there. So that is how Webster describes that. Then you see a whole bunch of stuff which is unclear to me, but he says these are dead bodies. And Webster's commentary is that these are bodies killed in various ways. I find the footage to be a bit unclear, so I can't say that I've seen dead bodies there. But you've seen many photographs of piles of dead bodies, supposedly from the Holocaust, and we'll get back to those piles of dead bodies a little bit later. But Webster's commentary here is that these piles of dead bodies are from people killed in various ways. And there already we need to stop, because that is not consistent with the Holocaust story. Remember now, the Holocaust, as explained by the Jews and as the kids learn in school, it's all about the Germans gassing the Jews to death in death camps. So Jews are taken to a place and they are slaughtered en masse by the Germans. That is what the Jews claim the Holocaust is. So to now say piles of dead bodies killed in various ways, that already is not strictly according to the Holocaust mythology, because most of them are supposed to have been mass slaughtered by some means. The commonly accepted means is gassing, although later you'll see the Jews also vary in their stories, because their stories are very inconsistent, as a liar's story would be. And also, these bodies are supposed to have been burnt. At Auschwitz and such places, it is supposedly by cremation ovens that are working 24/7 to burn up the dead Jews. But in other Jewish commentary, the Germans lay the Jews outside among piles of wood, and they put piles of wood and layers of Jews and layers of wood, and then they burn all these Jews, and these Jews are burned to ash. So the commonly accepted theme is that the Germans burn the dead Jews. So if you see these corpses lying there, you should already ask yourself, why are these corpses lying out in the open? Where are the Germans who are supposed to have been burning these things? But now, since you've seen the American soldiers, it becomes clear that we are looking at a, quote, death camp in operation. So the impression is created that the Americans, wonderful Americans, they came and saved the day. The Germans were busy killing the Jews, and the Americans arrived and stopped this disgusting process. And so you see all these dead Jews who would have been burned. So we've caught the Germans, we've caught them in the middle of this killing operation, and these are the dead Jews. That's the impression that you walk away with. But is this impression correct? So these clothes and these dead bodies, we don't really know where they are, but they come from some kind of camp. So remember, we don't really know where this footage is or where any of this is that we are seeing. All we can say is that this must be Europe, World War II, and it's got to do with the places that the Americans liberated. But then the film footage gets even more interesting. Then you see a statue which seems to give the impression that this footage was taken in a camp somewhere. But now, watch as the camera pans to the left from this statue. And this thing on the left, next to the statue, what do you see? you see railway wagons. So right close by is a train. It's very clear, it's visible, you see the trucks there. Now the rest of the footage also shows you the train. We can only assume that it's a train at or near the same spot, but in fact we don't know. And if you look at the first shots of the train, so now you see corpses inside this train, coach or truck, I'm not sure which is the correct term in this case, because it doesn't look like a normal passenger coach. I'd assume that wagon might be the better term for this. So here in this wagon, you see dead people just lying around in a strange way. Now, if you listen carefully, Webster actually says, in a typical gas, as if he's about to say, typical gas chamber. So Webster says, this is a typical gas chamber. These people just went in there and they just died. But look again at that picture. That's not a gas chamber. That's a railway truck. That's not a gas chamber. The thing's got wheels. You can see clearly these are people who are dead, who are lying inside a railway wagon. Look closely. You'll see it's got the doors. You can see it's elevated. Look underneath it. You'll see it's a railway wagon. So then Christie makes the remark, so did they then starve to death in those boxcars? So that's the correct term for this. So although he's caught off guard, he's seeing that these people have died in boxcars. Then he and Webster have an exchange about whether starving to death constitutes a Holocaust. But we'll discuss how these people died. Now they show close-up footage of these corpses, but then in the next one, you see yet again dead people lying in a boxcar from another angle. You'll see definitely these are people killed in boxcars on a railway line. And the second one doesn't have a top. So then as the camera pans down to the right, you see the boxcar's wheel and you'll see the railway track. Again, these are people who've been killed on a train. So Christie asks Webster, and are you sure these are Jewish bodies? Are these Jews? Webster says, well, you know, it could be Jews, could be gypsies, could be anyone. So we'll skip that for the moment. We'll come back to the identity of the people and who died. Looking at these bodies, there's nothing in particular about their clothing that sort of gives things away, but I almost thought I saw a helmet on one of them. So the identity of these people, there could be a bunch of different people that you are looking at who died on this train. Some of the dead on the side of the track seem to have what appears to be striped clothing on, so I'm not sure if that means that they were prisoners. But there are only a couple like that. Most of the others seem to have boots on and proper clothing. So even Webster admits that starving would not constitute a Holocaust. Then when Christie asks him, how do you know those are Jewish bodies? Then Webster says, I have a pretty good idea. And then he goes on and says, well, it could also be gypsies, etc. All the so-called peoples that the Nazis were out to exterminate. That's the bottom line of what he's angling at. So Christie then asks, could these be German bodies? And Webster says, I don't think the Germans knew what was going on there. Again, a point we'll get back to. So then you see some bodies, two bodies, lying in what appears to be a field on their back. And yet another close-up. The close-ups are actually interesting but also misleading. But I looked closely at some of that footage in the wagons. One of those dead bodies there definitely was wearing a helmet, a military helmet. So what we then saw, that Webster claims was evidence of the Holocaust was we saw an American soldier going through people's coats, but we don't know whose coats, where they are, whether they were Jews' coats or Germans' coats or somebody else's coats. We see lots of dead bodies and we see a lot of tragedy around a train. Lots of dead bodies inside a train and also lying next to the train and perhaps even out in the field. But nowhere in this did you see any proof that Jews were gassed or even cremation had taken place. What you'd seen is a violent scene where people have been killed. And most of what you've seen has been in and around a train. Clearly a train. And this train might have been next to a camp of some kind. Because you'll remember that as the camera panned away from the statue, it fell straight onto this train. But whether in fact that train is the same train as the other train, you can't tell. But if this came from some news report, one would assume that all these things are related. Maybe some camp that the Americans claimed they'd captured. But if so, none of the dead bodies are inside the camp or being cremated or inside a gas chamber or anything like that. Now, one thing you must remember about all the film footage that they show purporting to be of the Holocaust is all film footage that came from the American and other Allied armies as they were busy fighting their way into Germany. One thing that they don't really paint a clear picture of is what Germany was like in the final days of the war. You had massive Soviet armies coming from the east and fighting into Germany. You had massive Allied air attacks all across Germany. Germans were bombed from every angle, and enormous armies were hitting them from all sides. If you ever are looking for a true definition of what hell must be like, hell must have been the last few months in Germany for Germans. It must have been unbelievable what they went through. And the Germans had a lot of energy, even right to the end. It's also something nobody really talks about. But the tremendous strength and determination with which the Germans tried to fight against unbelievable odds is itself a tale that boggles the mind. So these Germans didn't go down without one heck of a fight. And literally everything had to be destroyed in Germany. Because if anything was left standing, the Germans would have still resisted. So everything in Germany was bombed from the air and shot up from the air that they could. 1,000 bomber raids were coming and carpet bombing all across Germany. The Germans were under attack in every conceivable way. Because if they didn't do that, these German men would never have surrendered. If these German men had even another bullet, another tank, another can of petrol, they would have fought on. And they did. Make no mistake, they fought until they couldn't fight anymore. So you should be quite aware of the unbelievable extent to which Germany was bombed by America and Britain and the Allies. Now let me show you a little piece of film footage. It is 3 minutes long, and it comes from the United States military. And take a look at who was very busy destroying trains. So now you've seen the film footage of American aircraft strafing trains. Just a note, do you know that most of World War II film footage is actually without sound? The sound effects were added afterwards. So when you watch World War II films and you hear the machine guns and the cannon fire and all that, that's actually not real. That's actually not what it was like. The film footage was silent. They went and they filmed, and all they did was film pictures. All the sound effects were added afterwards. And also in the course of the war, people came across film footage from whatever unknown source. And this footage would have no information on it at all. All you see is the film footage. The cameraman might be dead. It was maybe found in a house somewhere. So you have no idea, many times, where the film was taken, who took it, what it depicts, and stuff like that. A lot of World War II film footage, there is all kinds of things that we don't know about its context. And if you watch a lot of documentaries of World War II, you'll also see the same piece of footage used again and again in different documentaries. You'll see the same photographs even appearing in different places. I'm not saying that they're used out of context. I'm just saying that the amount of film footage out there is not as great as you might think. And some of it is open to interpretation. And one of the reasons is because of the sound. And another reason is because somebody took the film somewhere, but you don't know who or when. So it could be that the Allies found film footage taken by a German who's been killed, and it's found somewhere in a house or a place, and you don't know what he filmed. All you can see are the images in front of you. You don't know where it was taken, when it was taken, etc. But of course, as with everything, once you bring science into it, you can start identifying things. You can start telling the time of the year. You might even be able to figure out other things, like possible locations. There's a lot of sophisticated analysis that is possible nowadays that wasn't possible before. So in this film that you saw now, this American information film, you saw American aircraft attacking trains. And this is most likely German trains. I'm not saying I'm 100% sure, but I think it's most likely so. You could probably look at the countryside, probably look at a few other things, but the buildings appear to be European buildings, so this is not Japan. And anyway, they didn't invade mainland Japan, but they were definitely strafing inside Europe and inside Germany. Now, most of these trains that have been destroyed, you see that they are steam engines. Sometimes you can see that the bullets have damaged the boiler, and you see steam pouring out of there until maybe it explodes. But basically what you've got is American aircraft attacking trains. And you see huge explosions also sometimes. And this may well kill a lot of people in and around the train as well. In some of that film footage, you'll even notice that they're attacking a train, and you can see the train has already been attacked, and there is smoke and steam and stuff coming out from there. So it looks as if it's either one plane attacking multiple times, or multiple planes attacking a single train. Some of the explosions seem to be the boilers of the steam engines exploding, but there are other explosions that I'm not sure if that's caused by fuel or ammunition or something like that. But it will give you an idea that there were a lot of attacks going on against trains by Americans in Europe. While doing this video, I was thinking about some film footage I had seen elsewhere, and I couldn't for the life of me remember where I'd seen it, and I've been hunting for it for months. But the film footage I was looking for was also of American aircraft attacking roads and especially bridges, but also horses and carts. And I'd been hunting for this high and low for months, and I couldn't find it. Anyway, this evening while doing this video, I decided to try my luck, and can you believe, I actually found some film footage of exactly the stuff I was looking for. It's not everything, but it's a part of what I have seen before. And it's of American aircraft strafing roads. And that I have to show you. But first, let's finish with the trains. So there in the American film footage, you can see they've shot up trains. In one of those pictures, you can even see how all the boxcars have been damaged and all the goods have fallen out and all that sort of thing. So while they're attacking these trains, they're no doubt killing people. And so if we go back to Webster and what Webster was showing us, you will also have seen in the strafing runs, and I'll give you some more strafing runs to watch later in this video, then you'll see the many types of targets the Americans were busy shooting up. They were shooting up almost anything and everything they could find in Germany. So you were told by Webster that you had just seen Jews killed by Nazis, killed by Germans. But in actual fact, that film footage you saw, you might have seen Germans killed by Americans. Think about that. You might have seen Germans killed by Americans, but sold to you as Jews killed by Germans. Now, wouldn't that be a very disgusting situation? And I think that there's much to be said for that possibility. I'm not saying it's 100% certain, but I think there's a good 80% chance that that is exactly what you're seeing. Because you are seeing American soldiers in an area where Americans have probably been operating and fighting, and this is the end result. So you're probably seeing Germans or some other Europeans killed by Americans, but it's portrayed to you as killed by Germans. Innocent Jews killed by Germans. Gassed by Germans even. All nonsense, all rubbish. And if you look more closely at those bodies lying in the field, and even the one with the helmet in the boxcar, go and ask yourself if you're not looking at a German. Because at that stage in the war, German air power was pretty much gone. The Germans didn't have much left and didn't have much luxuries. So the people with the total air dominance were the Allies. So there's a big chance that all these things that you saw in that film footage, those were people killed by Americans. White people killed by Americans. European people killed by Americans. Think about that. And lied about. Lied about. And we're told, no, no, it's Jews. Jews killed by Germans. In the final hell days of Germany. And a topic for discussion one day will also be, why did Hitler prefer to fight on to the end? Because I think he had good reasons, and there are many reasons. And as utterly bizarre as this may sound, there may even be very long-term benefits as to why Hitler did what he did. And I don't think Hitler sent anyone to their death without having fully thought this matter through. He could have surrendered if he'd wanted to. Of course, he tried to make peace so very many times, and all peace offers were rebutted. Because people forget, the Jews made war against Hitler, and that war began in March 1933. And all these events are the end result of the mischief of the Jews and their desire to stop Germany being ruled by someone who was popular in Germany. You know, these days the Americans and all these so-called good guys are running around the world, and they've even done it here in Africa. Nation after nation after nation that was ruled well by whites and which was progressing, they came and said, no, 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 it's all wrong. It's all wrong. We must hand over to democracy. And all the Muslims who've died because America and the Jews said you needed democracy. And yet, if these people are so convinced about democracy, why then did they fight against Adolf Hitler, who was democratically elected, and everything he did in Germany went through the Reichstag, and it was German democracy in action. The Nazis was German democracy in action. So if these people believe so much in democracy, why did they go and fight the Germans? Again, what you are told and the excuses you are given for the resultant actions, they have got nothing to do with the actual real motives. Even the British Empire itself, chose dangerous allies in choosing America on the one hand and Russia on the other, because neither was friendly to the British Empire. And there is even a video where David Irving tells you that Roosevelt told Churchill straight up front that the British Empire would not exist in the future. So America had all kinds of global ideas, and the Roosevelt administration was filled with communists, and they were Jews. The vice president of America under FDR was a Jew named Wallace, and the FDR administration was filled with Jewish commies. And these Jewish commies, no doubt, talked all kinds of nonsense into FDR's head, the same way as has been going on since 9/11. Same old globalist garbage, and these people at a high level, their heads have swollen so much and they are busy trying to conquer the world in the name of apparently saving it. Saving it like they saved Europe. So returning to the final hell days of World War II, I will be showing you some more strafing footage to give you an idea of how much the Americans were busy shooting up things. But in the footage that I managed to find today, although it's got the important stuff that I do want you to see, there are other things that I haven't found footage for. In the original footage that I saw, which I can't remember where the heck I put it, the Americans were shooting up every bridge they could find. The aircraft were going in with rockets, and you'd see them blowing up bridge after bridge after bridge. They'd be shooting up everything that's moving on the roads. And the Germans were running out of fuel. So in the final part of World War II, the Germans had little or almost no fuel, and a big problem was food. And because all the transport was being shot up, food could not be transported, and people began starving. Everybody was starting to starve. The Germans, of course, also were struggling to feed themselves. So one of the most common Holocaust photos you will ever see is you'll see all these pictures of piles of corpses. But when you look at those corpses, they'll all be skinny. Every last one of them will be skinny. And you'll see these almost human skeletons. Amazingly, some are still alive. and you'll see these human skeletons, and the bodies are piled one on top of the other. And these are people who've starved to death. Then they take all these pictures of these piles of bodies, and they tell you, yes, but these are Jews killed by the Germans. But there's no evidence that they are Jews at all. You could be seeing prisoners of war. You could be seeing someone in a labor camp. You might even be seeing Germans. These are people who've starved to death. In one piece of British film footage of World War II, which is like this American footage showing the supposed liberation, they'll come and they'll show you all these skinny people. And then they'll say, oh, look at the Germans. Look at how they were killing the Jews slowly. So now they're implying that the Germans were starving the Jews to death. As if it was fun and games. As if the Germans were engaging in fun and games. And also notice in that show, in that comment by Webster, where he said, oh, the Germans probably didn't know what was going on. Absolute rubbish. Of course the Germans knew what was going on. The implication is, of course, that the Nazis were not telling all the Germans how they were killing the Jews. And that's not even what you're seeing here. But anyway, in a lot of this film footage you will see, and in the photographs, where they now try to prove, ah, here is the Holocaust. You see all those dead bodies there? That pile of skinny dead bodies? Those are Jews killed by the Germans. But again, if you go into the Jewish literature, none of these so-called Holocaust survivors and Holocaust books ever stated that the Germans were using starvation as a means of killing millions of Jews. It's all about gassing and all about mass extermination. It didn't have to do with starvation. But all the pictures that they'll show you, supposedly justifying and showing you actual proof of Jews being killed or having been killed, you'll see they're all a bunch of thin, emaciated people who probably haven't eaten in weeks and who then died. And now they want to tell you, oh, these are Jews killed by Germans. Again, what it might really be, they could be POWs, they could be slave labor, but again, there's no evidence the Germans killed them. These people, these piles and piles of corpses, could be people who've died because of starvation at the end of the war. Between the actions of the Soviets and all those good allies, these people didn't get food. The transport system was completely broken. And a consequence of it was that these people died of starvation. I should add that when the Americans were looking at invading Japan, one of their options was to cut off the rice supply, I think from the northern island to the southern island. And they estimated that 20 million Japanese could be starved to death. And starving 20 million Japanese was part of their military options. So don't think that our, quotes, good guys were above starving people to death by the million, or knowing that many would starve to death as a result of their actions. I don't want to moralize about World War II. World War II is ugly. But what I do have a problem with is misrepresenting who was killed and who was responsible for killing them. If the Germans weren't killing these people and weren't responsible for their deaths, then the Germans shouldn't be blamed for it. If it sits squarely in the side of the Allies, then we should admit that yes, this was the consequence of our actions, but We don't need to keep on blaming the Germans for something the Germans never did. But the Germans were fully blamed, and as you can see, every single picture, no matter the fact that it doesn't bear any resemblance to any of the Jewish Holocaust stories, it doesn't change the fact that they are always taking World War II stuff and massively misrepresenting it, and always blaming the Germans. The Germans are blamed for everything. All the warmongering and opportunism on our side is constantly overlooked. Not to mention the downright trickery intended to create war. So when you hear all these tall tales of German atrocities in the final months of the war, keep in mind the crazy situation in Germany, and that the Germans were very preoccupied fighting for their survival. They didn't have time for a lot of theatrics and extra things. They were doing all they could to just survive. People forget how few resources they had and how carefully they had to put them to use. And the Germans were very, very efficient at using a lot less resources than their enemies, who were drowning in resources. From the Russians to the Americans, they had tons and tons of things. The Germans were low on almost everything. But the spirited fight the Germans put up right to the very, very end is really one of the greatest examples of courage and resourcefulness in history, if not the greatest example. In the final days of France, Napoleon had a similar struggle. In 1814, a year before Waterloo, Napoleon was facing armies that were pouring in from all across Europe, and his own army was very small, and Napoleon was outnumbered at least 4-1. But the spirited fight he put up in 1814 to try and keep France independent, despite all these other armies maneuvering in and coming in for the kill, it was a very similar story. But Napoleon, like Hitler, did not see any need to surrender at all. And he never intended surrendering. He only abdicated because others told him to abdicate. But he even said that he would fight just as a general. He didn't have to be the emperor. He would do fine. He would just be yet another general in the field, and he'd be willing to fight on endlessly against the enemies. He wasn't going to quit at all, ever. So Napoleon, like Hitler, wasn't a quitter and didn't see the benefits of surrendering when he knew that it would buy them nothing. But when others told him that it was better for the nation for him to abdicate, then he did that. He did what he thought was best for France. So the French and the Germans experienced a lot of similar things, but the Germans had it much worse. And the resourcefulness of the Germans in the last year of their existence is almost unbelievable. What the Germans managed to do even then will completely astound you. With their very minimal resources, some of the plans they came up with were truly brilliant. I'm not talking so much about the V2 rockets, but there were other things that they had, and some of these ideas were just beyond amazing. Now let's take a look at another piece of film footage, the piece of film footage that I'm so glad I managed to get a little bit of it. It's not everything I've seen, but this is definitely part of what I've seen before. In this little piece of film footage that I managed to get off YouTube, I've left the original intro where they tell you the website they are operating from. One of the websites is closed, but the other one does exist. And it seems that they have other footage and stuff for sale. But in this film footage, it is yet again about American aircraft strafing. But this time, it's on roads. And in this very short piece of footage, you will see from the American plane's cameras, you'll see that they are diving down and shooting horses and carts. When this film footage was put on YouTube, they were actually claiming that we are seeing Americans committing an atrocity by shooting up German farmers. I'm not completely sure of the context of this. I'm not sure if Germans were even transporting ammunition and stuff in horses and carts because they didn't have fuel. So I don't know the detail about why the Americans were shooting up these horses and carts, or whether it was just policy to shoot up everything that moved on the roads. They were blowing up bridges and all sorts of stuff. This little piece of film footage is a part of something bigger that I've seen before, and I still have not been able to find it. But at least with this, you'll be able to see some of what I saw. Among the things that I saw on the other film footage was American aircraft coming down and shooting up bridges, destroying one bridge after another. And they were shooting up anything and everything that moved on the roads. So it looks to me as if the Americans were busy trying to destroy everything that was moving along the roads and the railway lines, because this was how to bring Germany to a grinding halt. But the most bizarre thing is to watch them shooting up horses and carts. And even this film footage of the horses and carts is not as much as I've seen. I've actually seen more. And among the film footage that I have seen, you see them not just firing with machine guns or 20mm cannons, they also fire rockets at these horses and carts. And you see the horses being blown up and flying through the air. It's really quite a gruesome thing because they're killing the horses and whoever's with them. So it could be that these are farmers, because Germans did have carts like these. Their farmers did have these types of carts. But whether they were actually carrying food or carrying something else, I don't know the reason for it. Anyhow, here they are shooting up horses and carts. And yeah, it's a pretty nasty, gruesome thing. So yeah, you could be watching German farmers being killed, because these definitely are not military weapons, but I don't know what they're transporting. And I don't know if the Germans in their desperation are even transporting ammunition via horses and carts. That is possible. It is possible. But that's not to say that every single horse and cart is carrying ammunition. It could be carrying something else. So take a look at this. This is also 1945. So that was the horses and carts being shot up. Pretty nasty stuff. If you looked closely, you'd see in some of them that the horses are panicking and they're starting to run wildly as they're being shot at. Now here's another 6 minutes of film footage. It's just under 7 minutes long. And this is also American aircraft shooting up Germany, it appears. But here, before each shot starts, it actually shows you the take. So you could probably use this to get to archives and to find out exactly which plane did this on which date and where they were. So you could use this as a way of digging further into the matter. But the point here is to just show you again the many things that the American Air Force was shooting up. Was shooting up anything on the road. You'll see it was shooting at buildings and things near buildings and in fields. And in one of the scenes, I think you even see a truck or something crossing a bridge. And in another one, you'll see them shooting at ships in a river. So this will give you an idea of how much activity was going on. Obviously, these are just teeny-weeny portions of what was happening on the battlefield. But it brings us back to that Webster TV show and my assertion that if anybody was killing anyone, it was Americans shooting up every train in Germany. And that those corpses you saw weren't of Jews, they were most likely of Germans killed by Americans. And this film footage, I might add, on YouTube where I got it, it said this is strafing in 1945. So I think that most of the fighting that you see in 1945 is in Germany. So that was all the strafing of various things in 1945. 1945 was a nasty year for Germans. A friend of mine was born in Germany in 1945, and he suffers from certain health problems, which he told me is the result of his mother suffering from malnutrition when she was pregnant with him. So there are some things I'd like to wind up with before I show you the final piece of film footage, because don't think by any means we've even come close to covering the Holocaust and the Jewish lies about World War II. We've hardly begun. While I was hunting around on YouTube for videos and I was looking around, I stumbled on some old American comedy, and it was Jerry Lewis. As a kid in Rhodesia, I remember seeing Jerry Lewis among many other Americans on TV then. And of course, not being aware of what a Jew is, I'd thought that Jerry Lewis is just another white American. But nowadays, now that I'm more Jew-wise, when I see actors and actresses and various people, I ask myself, could this be a Jew? And when I was watching Jerry Lewis doing his little comedy skit, there was a certain thing about it that made me think, you know, this is not quite what I would expect from an American. So I quickly thought, let me go and check. Could it be that Jerry Lewis is a Jew? And indeed, it is. Now, the interesting thing also to notice about Jerry Lewis is that if you look at him, he doesn't offhand have Jewish features. He's got a very strong chin, for example, and he doesn't really have that sort of Jewish look to him. But this guy is a genuine Jew. And if you go and read up what they say about him on Wikipedia, it says the following. Jerry Lewis, born March 16, 1926, is an American comedian, actor, singer, film producer, screenwriter, and film director. And then it goes on to tell you about his parents and his original name. It says he was born Joseph Levitch. Some sources say Jerome Levitch. And he was born in New Jersey to Russian Jewish parents. His father, Daniel Levitch, was a master of ceremonies and vaudeville entertainer, and he used the professional name Danny Lewis. So here is a Jew in America, a Russian Jew, and many Americans would be excused for thinking that he's an American. But he's not. He's a Russian Jew. And so it goes. Here in South Africa, as I've mentioned, we have a Jewess called Helen Ziller. There are many Jews in South African politics, many actually. But the one that is the most interesting of recent times is Helen Ziller. And Helen Ziller, now Helen Ziller is a Jewess whose parents fled from Germany. And there are quite a number of prominent South African Jews whom, if you go and look at where they came from, you'll find that they are from German Jewish descent, from German Jews who left Germany in 1937. It's amazing how many South African Jews arrived here in 1937. That is 2 years before World War II officially began. And the guy who did the Adolf the Great website, he told me that in his studies, and I must tell you, he did some very interesting studies. There are still some of them that I want to tell you about. But he told me that by his own conclusions, he was convinced that 70% of the Jews of Germany left Germany before the first shot was fired of World War II. I don't know how he arrived at that conclusion, but I must tell you, the other stuff I discussed with him, he is a very thorough guy, and some of his other conclusions were very interesting, and I've come round to agreeing with him. At first I thought he was wrong, but later, after much digging, I came to conclude that this guy really knows his stuff. But he was of the opinion that 70% of German Jews left Germany before any shots were fired in World War II. Now, the South African Jewess Helen Ziller, she is supposedly a liberal, but I know somebody who worked with her. That person told me, and that person, by the way, is pro-Jew. This pro-Jew person who worked with her told me that she's an outright commie. But the joke about Jewess Helen Ziller is that most of white South Africans have voted for her in the last 10 years. Most white South Africans have voted for a woman that they don't know she's a Jewess. She claims to be a Christian, but both her parents were German Jews. And she's an actual commie. She even worked for the Black Sash, which was regarded by the Boer military people as being a communist front. And she even worked for the Black Sash. So here is an enemy Jewess that now in black South Africa, whites vote for her because they believe she's the only hope we have. That's how we've deteriorated. And these whites, most of the whites in South Africa, don't even know she's a Jewess. And they don't even know that she's a commie. And they don't even know that she worked for our very enemies who are out to kill us. But such is the rotten state we are in. But anyhow, it was interesting for me to discover now that Jerry Lewis is yet another Jew. But these days I keep practicing my Jew detection to see who really is a Jew. And you'd be shocked at how many there are. Absolutely shocked. But on Vice.com, there was a woman who wrote an article about Jerry Lewis and about some self-serving thing he did a couple of years ago, reminding everybody of his greatness. And he had a whole Jerry Lewis get together there in LA, I think it was. Anyway, this woman called Megan, she wrote a pretty nasty review of Jerry Lewis because it seems she was there. And people were trying to be pleasant to him, and he was extremely nasty to people, and he was sarcastic and very miserable. He was really quite a mean-spirited, nasty guy. And she ends her article by saying, "I thought, no, God bless you, Jerry Lewis, you incorrigible sack of shit, never die." And you'll find it on Vice.com. It's called Jerry Lewis is Still Alive. But anyhow, so it shows you these people are a miserable bunch of people. And something else I heard from somebody who did security duty at an airport in Eastern Europe. He was telling me that Jews from Israel fly there regularly and stay there for a time and then they go back to Israel. And he said that the flights back to Israel were normally 10 to 15 minutes late because the Jews performed and gave so much trouble to the people who were trying to put them through the processes to get on the plane. Anyhow, one day, due to some kind of security problem, the Israeli Secret Service took over and was dealing with the Jews for that day. And he said to me that the moment that the Israeli Secret Service was there, all these Jews were well behaved. They weren't complaining, they weren't performing, they weren't giving any kinds of problems at all. But he said, on the days when it was the normal local people who were doing the security, the Jews were giving them endless grief and screeching and howling and performing about everything. He even told me about a Jew who broke the rules trying to get a gun onto the plane, a guy who should have known better and who refused to follow procedure. But we'll talk a bit more about Jewish misbehavior, because there are some other stories that I've heard about Jews. And it may be worth looking around and getting people to talk more about things that they've seen Jews getting up to. Because Jews are really, really a miserable bunch of rotten people. When you get to know them, you really get to realize what absolute rubbish they are. So let's take a look at some other points from that interview between Doug Christie and Webster. I just wanted to touch on a few points. I must say this Doug Christie really is a guy with a lot of guts. And he seems to be a guy who had clients who didn't even pay him much, but he was operating on principles. A principled lawyer, can you believe? Such a rarity in this world. Also, right at the beginning, there was a Jew, rabbi, who then said, oh no, I didn't say the Holocaust took place, but the president of this said that, and so on and so forth. So suddenly the Jew, using his Jew talk, he now fobs it off and says, oh, but the president said this, and so on and so forth. So he's using other people's names as the so-called justification and proof that this event took place. But of course, as you can see, even the presidents will just lie through their teeth as need be. We really don't have honest governments anymore. If you are honest, you probably get destroyed. Somebody said to me one day on my YouTube channel that maybe Rhodesia was the last free white country. But actually, that would mean maybe the last free white country was apartheid South Africa. That was probably the last time that whites really ruled themselves and were free. So Rhodesia and South Africa were probably the last two free white countries. And the last time Germany was free was in 1945. And much the same can be said for Europe. I was watching a Jew troll who's very busy on my channel. And this Jew troll was also trying to do all sorts of things to try and undermine the truth. But I watched a very spirited viewer who was debating this troll and doing so very well, using the name Butters Stotch, I think it is. Anyhow, the Jew troll then, in defending these laws against Holocaust denial, said that, yes, but Holocaust denial is not illegal in the main countries that were the Allies in World War II. You don't get put in jail for Holocaust denial in America and Britain and so forth. So he said that, you know, Holocaust denial is only in a couple of little countries that don't really matter. Of course, among those countries that don't really matter would be Germany and France and several European countries. So yes, those countries do matter, and they are all white countries. It's whites who are not allowed to talk about the Holocaust. It is whites that are thrown in jail. It is whites who are not allowed to tell the truth or to engage in free thought. That is why it does matter. Another inaccurate fact from this Webster interview is they discuss the murder of the Polish officers in Katyn Forest. These were Soviets who massacred the cream of the Polish army. And they were saying in this interview that it's 6,000 or 10,000. That's wrong. I checked. Even Wikipedia uses the number 22,000. Though I recall having heard 30,000 at some point. But anyhow, at least 22,000 Poles were shot dead in Katyn Forest. They were executed there by the Soviets. Of course, the world blamed the Germans, even though the Germans allowed foreigners to come in and to investigate the scene. The Germans allowed forensic scientists and experts from outside to come and have a look, and to come and look for themselves and see what the evidence is. And that is how you deal with a real massacre, a real extermination of people. So if you can go and dig up and look around where 22,000 were killed, I'm sure it would be very easy to go and look around where 1 million or 6 million Jews were killed. Really, it's not rocket science at all. But no Jewish autopsy has ever been done. No bodies, no bones, no nothing has been dug up. And when Doug Christie and Webster spoke about, quotes, occupied Europe being bombed, you know, that's kind of stupid. It's yet another one of these propaganda terms, occupied Europe, as if somebody had invaded Europe. No, Europe was being occupied by Europeans. It was outsiders who invaded Europe and changed Europe's government and got rid of the Germans and so forth. It's like the Boers, when the Boers had their two Boer republics here in South Africa, and the British Empire came and deposed them and got rid of their governments and broke their power and installed who they wanted to. That is exactly the same thing. And it's the same thing as what happened with the French under Napoleon. In fact, you shouldn't use the term occupied Europe. Maybe the correct term is united Europe. When Europe was united by the Germans, Europe was then invaded by outside forces, because the raw power of Europe was being destroyed, just like we whites in Africa were deposed from power, all for the same reason. We were not falling in line with their globalist schemes, so we had to go. Now, a very interesting discussion that happened between Webster and Doug Christie was the notion of gas chambers in France. Since half of France was occupied by the Germans, and they had Jews there, France had Jews before the war. And do you know that the population of Jews in France increased so that at the end of the war, there were more Jews in France than had been at the beginning of the war? And so, of course, as Christie points out, if the Germans were building gas chambers everywhere to gas every Jew they could find, why didn't they build gas chambers in France? And then, of course, Webster fobbed it off with, oh, well, I'm sure if they'd been given enough time, they'd have done it. When we go and look at Douglas Reed, Douglas Reed was also in Europe. And Douglas Reed stated long ago that these Holocaust stories were coming up from Eastern Europe because it was easier to invent lies in places that were uncontrolled, in places that were backward, in places that had no proper administration. It was much easier to lie about what was going on there. And he wrote about this long time ago. Alex Linder did an audiobook on Onward Christian Soldiers, and that too is written by an American who was up in the Baltic, I think it was. And this guy also investigated story after story submitted to him by Jews. And upon investigation, this American journalist found every single one to be a lie. So there were competent people from America who were in Europe, and they did report on it, but they were among the few. But they were present in Europe, just like Douglas Reed was in Europe, and he knew Europe like the back of his hand. So they knew the Jews were talking nonsense. Douglas Reed even wrote his expose in about 1943. It's probably the earliest expose that I've come across regarding the Jews and their lies about the Germans. But we'll get back to Douglas Reed. Very fascinating fellow. So I did enjoy when they spoke about how intolerant the liberals are. And then Christie is also defending, or was defending, a Canadian school teacher who is up for supposed hate speech against the Jews. But of course, every school teacher can teach the kids the Holocaust lie and can teach the kids to be anti-white and to hate white people. And that's not hate speech, as usual. As long as it's the Jews who benefit, everything's okay. In this interview that Webster did with Doug Christie, at the 31-minute mark, he tells the story of this Jewish woman who was a Holocaust survivor. But the interesting thing is, he mentions her name as Leitner. And this is very interesting, because when I ran into this Jewess who was a spy, who gave me a lot of trouble here in South Africa, she actually had that surname. But I didn't know she was a Jewess. And when you looked at her, you couldn't tell she was a Jewess. She was a blonde woman, and she didn't in any way look Jewish. And when she told me her surname was Leitner, I asked her, you know, what is Leitner? Where do you come from? And her words to me were, it's an old Austrian name. And I thought, ah, she's from Austria. Okay, that's pretty okay. What I didn't know was that Jews were very active in Austria. And that, of course, is where Adolf Hitler ran into the Jews. So it never occurred to me in those days of my ignorance that I'm actually talking to a Jewess. She may be from Austria, but she's a Jewess. And this woman went on to cause tremendous problems. But the surname didn't strike me as Jewish, because I don't know the Jewish surnames in Europe. I only know the obvious ones like the American ones. Anyhow, it was only several months ago on the internet that I came across an American anti-white activist. And when I looked at this guy's details on YouTube, and this was another, quotes, white, who's very anti-white, I saw that his surname is Leitner. And that was the first time that it started making me think, aha, isn't this guy a Jew? Because then that would make that woman who was the spy, she's a Jewess then. Well, here we see yet another surname exactly the same coming up. And in this case, Webster tells the story that she claimed to be a Holocaust survivor. And he tells what a convincing story she tells. Oh, she's so convincing. Yes, Mr. Webster, they are indeed good liars. I did enjoy Doug Christie's statement that the Holocaust has become a religious dogma and that the heretics will be punished for it. So yeah, if the Jews could get away with that, they'd love that. And right at the end of the interview, they did discuss that at the end of World War I, it was admitted that all the stories that Germans had been bayoneting Belgian babies had been Allied propaganda. So the Allies did admit at the end of World War I that they had made up these lies about the Germans. But of course now at the end of World War II, they did not admit to making up any lies. And indeed, everyone's been promoting more lies than ever before about Germany. So the final thing I'm going to leave you with is a very short video. It's about 8.5 minutes long. It's a very short video, And someone put it together and put it on YouTube. Some of it is a bit hard to read, but there are a couple of interesting points in this little video that I've not seen before. But it's a very quick little session, quick introduction into the Holocaust lie, and covers a couple of points. Of course, one of the things they don't really go into is that Zyklon, which is claimed to have been the agent that was used to kill the Jews with, that Zyklon used to be a very common product that was used for various purposes, in this case, the killing of lice. And it never was a dangerous thing. But the Jews have claimed that, oh, this is such a dangerous thing, and they've used this to murder all these Jews. And you'll see Zyklon coming up again and again. But actually, it's something that was quite common in the past, and it wasn't even dangerous. It's not life-threatening at all. But it's used in all these documentaries. But in this short 8-minute clip, you'll get a couple of interesting points. Some of them I've never seen before, but it'll give you a little bit of a feel for this whole Holocaust thing. In this video, I've basically just introduced you to the basics of the Holocaust lie, and that virtually everything you've been told about it is completely unsubstantiated. This is just total junk. But even President Obama has spoken about what a disastrous, terrible, horrific thing it was. Of course, he knows nothing. And most of these dummies who don't know anything are actually promoted and pushed up the ladder by the Jews. I think the Jews detect stupidity. And when they see someone who's either stupid or unethical or both, and they say, ah, this is a guy who could work for us, he'll tell any story we tell him to tell. He's too dumb to know otherwise. And I think that goes for most of these politicians. And others like Angela Merkel, I think she's probably so guilt-ridden and just trying to kiss Jew ass every day. She's truly an idiot. Monica Stone told me the other day that someone from Europe was saying to her, if they could have an election tomorrow in Germany, Angela Merkel would be out on her ass. But then again, she'd probably stay because maybe the elections in Germany are rigged just like they are in so many other places. I hope that I've given you some food for thought and opened your mind a little bit about World War II. There is so much about World War II that you've not been told about. And most of what you've heard about World War II is so propagandized, it's unreal. At the end of this little clip, the very last clip that this guy has, and I'm not sure if it's easy enough to read, but right at the very end, he puts a blank space with a frame, and he says, here is a picture of an actual Holocaust chamber. And then, of course, there's nothing in there. You just see this blank area. And he says, if you can't see the gas chamber, then it's because you're an anti-Semite. So he's mocking the Jews somewhat. And really, this whole thing should be laughed to scorn. This is one of the biggest scams in history. And there are Holocaust museums all over the show. There are Holocaust museums in Germany, in America, all over. None of this is actually real, and none of it's got anything to do with reality, or even with the people who live there. Like, in what way would this be of relevance to Americans? But the Jews are busy shoving Holocaust propaganda down everyone's throats. And worst of all, they are teaching this to the children. I was reading that in recent years in South Africa, the Holocaust has also come onto the South African school education system. So now South African kids, black and white, are going to be taught about this stupid Holocaust. The Jews are messing with the heads of all the young kids, especially the white kids. more than you can believe. It's absolutely sinful. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed this little clip. That's it for today. I hope I've given you food for thought. We'll be chatting again soon.